Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week, every Friday, I am honored to share the microphone with really interesting entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, just people who have these great stories to share, and they are really excited to freely share their business wisdom tips, their actionable advice, and sometimes more importantly, their story, how they got where they are now and where they're planning on going, because the journey never does stop. In short, these are people who are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome author, speaker, and engagement evangelist Ruth K. Ross. In her words, a journey with a destination that only you can choose is a journey that will ignite your life and refuel your career. Sorry, my yard crew is outside and they're distracting me. Corporate leaders, mid-career professionals, entrepreneurs, and others have sought Ruth out as their guide because she took this journey herself. And to her amazement, she realized that she was not alone in her feelings of disenfranchisement, anxiety, boredom, and apathy, and I know we can all resonate to that. Then she did what many of us think about but almost never do. She stopped and she reassessed, and then she committed to the life that she wanted to lead. The result is that Ruth created resources to help leaders identify whether the disengagement disease is infecting their organizations or even themselves. As a successful HR executive for top Fortune 500 companies, she realized that she felt held hostage by the trappings that come with the big job. And you all know what that is, the big job. You've got the corner office, the briefcase. You're running around like a crazy person. You're having a great time. But there comes a point, as she found, that even though she was an influencer for her company, she felt invisible. And perhaps even more debilitating, she recognized that her work just didn't excite her any longer. So after putting a name to these feelings and admitting that she was disengaged, she set out on a new path as an advocate for treating this affliction. Now, if Ruth's story strikes a chord with you, join her and us today on a journey toward reengaging your life and your career. You don't have to pack for the trip. In fact, you may well end up discarding baggage that may be holding you back from coming alive. Ruth, I'm so excited to talk with you today. I think we all have this disease. I'm kind of thinking I had it a year ago, and I can't wait to see what you have to say, so welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Denise. I'm honored to be here.
Well, you have got a great story. You and I had a tremendous chat the other day, and I learned a great deal about you, and I found you very, very impressive. Can you tell our audience a little bit about ourselves that we didn't cover in the intro?
Well, sure. First of all, thank you so much for that kind introduction. You know, I'm one of those people who, like every one of us that's on the phone, right? We graduate from college, and or high school, maybe you didn't have an opportunity to go to college. And we go out there, and we're looking for that first J-O-B, right? Because we want a job. We need the paycheck. We need the benefits. But do we ever really stop and think about what's my career versus what's my job? And, you know, life really is a journey. It's not about the destination. And it doesn't come with a roadmap or a GPS device, so somehow we navigate our way. And so for me, I went to college, and then I got my master's degree in counseling, and the next logical step for me was to go into human resources. And before you know it, I spent 30 years doing that career. The first half of that career was in New York, and then the last 18, 19 years have been in San Francisco. And I've worked for some great companies, and I had risen to the ranks of executive VP of HR, and then one day it all changed for me.
What happened?
I had what I refer to as my face in the mirror moment. So, you know, we all get up in the morning, get dressed, hopefully, you know, look in a mirror to sort of comb our hair, or in the case of women, maybe put on our makeup and get ready to go into the office. And I happened to have been alone in the house that morning, and I was looking in the mirror, getting ready to go to work, and for whatever reason, I just stopped, took a really long look at myself, and then started screaming out loud, "When the heck are you going to admit that you are completely dead inside?" Now, I might not have used those clean words, right? But for your listening audience, you get the context. I'm really screaming into this mirror and saying, "You have been a fraud, and you need to finally admit that you've lost the passion for what you did for 30 years of your career."
You have no idea what brought that on? I mean, had you, there had to have been some kind of trickles of consciousness at some point, but apparently it just kind of came to a head that morning?
Yeah, I'd like to say that, you know, everyone always asks, was there a straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak?
Right.
But I like to think of it this way. There are underlying causes of why people disengage in the workplace. So just to quickly name a few, and if you want, we can go into more detail later, but things like really the job not being what was promised to you, or feeling stuck and not able to advance, or lack of appreciation or recognition, or working for a really bad or a bully boss. But I actually believe that it's almost like a series of paper cuts. And you know, when you get a paper cut, it doesn't really bleed, right? But it sort of makes a cut, and it really stings, particularly if you get certain things in it. So my boss yelled at me today in front of other people, paper cut. I got a bad performance review, paper cut. The project I've been so passionate about for 18 months, the funding gets cut. Paper cut, right? So each one of them by themselves isn't really that bad, but if you start to put one paper cut on top of another, on top of another, it tends to form a hard scar that doesn't just go away easily. And I really think that's what happened to me. I was dealing with a bully boss. I was tired. My company had acquired another across the country and doubled in size overnight. I'm constantly on an airplane. I'm dealing with all kinds of things, and I think it was just so many paper cuts that finally that day formed a scar that made me look in the mirror.
You know that phrase, death from a thousand paper cuts?
Absolutely.
Didn't happen by accident.
No.
And that can happen, and then, of course, and we're not talking about this just yet, but then, of course, your personal life is all involved in that, because people like to think that, oh, business is one thing. You know, your personal life is another. That is just simply not true. We are complete people, and everything that happens to us during the day, whether it's at home or whether it's at work, affects us.
I couldn't agree with you more. I say a lot that you cannot compartmentalize your life, because, as you said, what happens at home affects you at work and vice versa. You know, if you're dealing with stresses at home, whether it's financial or relationship, children, whatever the case may be, when you get dressed in the morning, that stress actually gets dressed with you and commutes in, whether you're driving an hour or you're just going down the hallway to your home office, that stress gets dressed with you. And conversely, when you're dealing with things at work, like I had a bully boss, well, I had more than one bully boss, but I had a bully boss. And when that person would do things, it would really affect me, and I couldn't leave it in my office. It would come home on the drive with me and impact me at home and in my relationship with my spouse and with my friends. You can't get away from it.
You really can't. And the problem with that is that after a while, you do kind of just either get very, very angry, or you just deaden yourself to the pain somehow. And that's just, it's so difficult. It makes life difficult, particularly when, you know, we're all taught, okay, we want the big job. We want the big corner office. We want the briefcase. We want to be traveling on the plane. We want to get to see the United States. But when we're exhausted and we're feeling like, you know, this may not have been what I signed up for. And by the way, if you yell at me one more time, I'm probably going to staple your tie to the wall. There comes a point, doesn't it? Well, and I was very polite. Aren't you proud of me? But I mean, doesn't there just come a point where you say, and you did, I've had enough. I can't take this anymore. This is not where I want to be any longer. So what happened after that? What did you do?
Well, I think for most people, they don't just have the ability to walk away. And I'm really fond of saying that you should actually walk towards something better, not run away from something. So let me tell you what happens to most people when they have that same aha face in the mirror moment as I did, when they recognize that they're not really engaged in what they're doing. And by the way, 87% of the global workforce and 68.5% domestically have identified themselves as disengaged. So this is not a small issue. But there's three things that happen. One is that you really call it out and acknowledge it. You know, I had that truth moment, right, where I said, stop being a fraud, admit what's going on here. And for many people, they can't afford to make that big life-changing moment right then. But the simple act of actually acknowledging it and calling it out and realizing you're not alone in this can really set you on a great path. So for some people, it's the simple act of acknowledging it. For other people, it's about what I call job sculpting, tweaking, going to talk to someone, be it a manager, maybe HR, a colleague, and saying, you know, I just need to change a little something that's going to reignite me, reengage me. And sometimes it's just a subtle change that can make a really big difference. But the third thing that can happen is what happened to me when I said, you know what, this isn't about a sculpting and a little change. I really don't think I want to do this anymore. But now I need to be thoughtful, planful, and strategic and really think about how I can walk towards something better. And in my case, it actually took 10 months from the time I had my face in the mirror moment to actually be able to vote myself off the corporate island, so to speak, and become an entrepreneur.
10 months is not bad. That's actually pretty impressive.
Well,
so what were some of the steps that you took? I mean, clearly you took this very seriously, this little mini breakdown that you had in the mirror, and you started getting very strategic about it. Are you able to share some of the things that you did at that time?
I'd be delighted to share. And I think the important thing to know is that I had been planful before those 10 months in many ways because I'd always been a saver. I tell kids coming out of college today, don't just save for retirement, which you absolutely have to do in your first job. I waited a few jobs, right? We all know the stories of how important it is. But I also tell people to start saving for a walk-away fund. You know, have two less lattes a week.
Right.
You always want to have options and have the ability to walk away and never have to feel like you're stuck. So in my case, you know, we had been very responsible, had been savers. So that part of the equation I had felt pretty good with. So I'd made this decision, and then I'm like, well, now what? And so I literally went old school. Forget technology. I literally took out a lined sheet of paper and a pen, and I drew a line halfway down the page, and on one side I said, what is it I'm really passionate about? And on the other side, I had deal breakers. So I'll share some of my stuff with you. On the passion side, I knew that I wanted to do something more creative. I wanted to write. I really wanted to speak. For the 30 years I was in corporate life, 25 out of those, I had the opportunity to speak at hundreds of events and knew I was good at it, but more importantly, no pun intended, I came alive when I was in front of an audience and being able to share my knowledge and my wisdom about things. So creative, writing, speaking, I knew that I wanted flexibility in my life. And on the deal breaker side, the first one on the list, and this shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, was no boss.
Mm-hmm.
I'd had enough, right? while I had some great ones in my life and career, I had some really bad ones too. And I really knew at that point that I didn't want a boss, but equally as important, I didn't want to manage anyone anymore. I was a really good manager. I had people that worked for me 10, 13, 15 years, loyalty. But at some point, I knew I was done. I knew I needed to take care of me, and I couldn't give 100%. And the other was that it was really important for me to be doing something where I could do it from anywhere. I have elderly parents. My dad has since recently passed on. My mom is not doing that well. And they're all the way across the country. I wanted to do something where I knew I had the ability to see them as often as I wanted. So those are just some examples of kind of what I did, right? Paper and pen. Any one of us can do that. And I tell people all the time that if your passion is around something, maybe a product or a service, then you have to think about how to monetize that so that you can afford to walk away. So those are just a few of the things I did.
One of the things that I think is so important, and I love the idea of paper and pen. I do the same thing. For me, I keep a journal, but my journal is digital because my brain just outruns my fingers. I cannot write as quickly as my brain thinks, so I type everything into my journal. But when I'm planning something, give me a good old-fashioned, you know, pad of paper and a pen, and I'll carry it around the house with me and just keep adding or crossing out. And eventually, after I'm through vacuuming or chasing squirrels with the dog, I've got my plan. It just works that way for me.
And I would say that, by the way, if people want to do this exercise and they want to do it online, cause I tend to write better as well when I'm typing.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. It's just the ability to think it through. So you can be old school, you can be new school. I just really want people to take a moment to really reflect and think about what is it that makes them happy? What is it that makes them excited to get up in the morning and go to work? Because there's nothing worse than those Monday morning blues, especially when they become Tuesday morning, Wednesday, and so forth.
Did you have any moments, and this is an entrepreneurial thing, we all do it, most of us tend to have cast iron stomachs, and if we get knocked down, we just get back up and run at it again. But what were some of the most fearful parts of this 10 months when you said, okay, I'm going to do this, but were you ever just looking fear straight in the face, and if so, what did you do about it?
You know, that's a great question, and you know, just a sort of thing, no one's really ever asked me that before, but looking back now and thinking about it, I really didn't have fear because I had an incredible support system with my husband and my family and my friends. I had my walk-away fund to take care of me, but more importantly, I had the words of my father, who was a brilliant doctor, who said to me over and over and over again, he got up in the morning every day passionate about what he did. So I have to say that the only fear I actually had now thinking this through was once I made the decision and it was written in stone and I had a leave date and all of that, I flew to Virginia and went to see my parents and told them, you want to talk about fear? Depression-era babies, right?
Right.
The first thing when I tell them this was they gave me an exam that was worse than any IRS auditor. You know, do I have retirement? Do I have long-term care insurance? Do I have this? Do I have that? And once I assured them that I was fine, I had been thoughtful and the like, my father kind of sat back. He had this big reclining chair that he loved to sit in. And he kind of got very quiet and he looked at me and he said, okay, so I don't understand. Tell me why you're doing this. And I looked at him and I said, Dad, it's because I lost the passion for what I do. And he got up, gave me a big hug and said, I'm so proud of you. So that's when the fear, right, and you can exhale, kind of goes out the window. But that was really the only fear I faced, was my parents' support and blessing to do this.
That is a wonderful story. I mean, that really is. Listen, you have. I watched a video of you the other day when you were on an airplane, and I would love for you to tell that story because I think it's in keeping with what we're talking about at the moment.
I'll tell the short version of it. I love this story. And let me preface it by saying disengagement does not discriminate. It doesn't care if you are a secretary, a manager, or a CEO. It doesn't care if you work for yourself, if you work for a nonprofit or a for-profit corporation. It doesn't care if you are black or white. It doesn't care if you're male or female, young or old. It doesn't discriminate. And that really came home to me in this story. So a couple of years ago, it was around the time that I was writing my book. I had already left my company, and I'm on an airplane, and I was going to a client. I was flying from San Francisco to Salt Lake City. And I was on one of those airplanes that has a two and two seat across, and I was sitting in the aisle, and this gentleman came to get into the window seat next to me, and he went to put his bag in the overhead, and the laptop he was holding in his arm slipped and hit me in the head. Thankfully, no blood, but of course he was traumatized, and we started chatting at some point during the flight. He kept apologizing, and so of course you ask those questions, you know, what do you do, what do you do, and turns out that he worked for an advertising agency where he made videos, and one of them was for a client that happened to have been my former company. So we kind of chuckled about that. And he said, what do you do? And I said, well, I've now taken early retirement, and I'm writing a book about disengagement in the workplace. And we chatted for a few minutes, and he looked at me, handed me his card, and said, you need to talk with me because I'm going through that now. And I estimate that he was a white male, probably in his mid-30s. And so he went back to doing
young.
So he was young, right. Because, again, age, it doesn't discriminate, young or old. So I go back to – he goes back to work, and I go back to reading, I think, my Us magazine. And a few minutes later, I get a tap on my right shoulder, and I turn and see the woman across the aisle from me, who is an African-American woman, I'm going to guess maybe in her mid-40s, and she's whispering to me and said, I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but I heard what you were talking about. You should interview me as well because I'm so disengaged. I'm actually taking a new job with my company. I'm transferring from Salt Lake City to San Francisco in hopes of getting engaged again. And so I quietly looked at her, and I said, well, what do you do? Who do you work for? And she put a finger to her lips as if to silence me, pointed to the pin that was on her lapel of her shirt, and it was the airline we were flying on.
I love that story.
It was great. So there's actually a one final piece to it. So we exchange cards, and I go back to my Us magazine, and shortly the plane lands, and it was one of those small planes where you have to wait on the jetway to get your bigger bags. And I'm lined up on the jetway, and this stunningly beautiful woman, looked to be in her early 60s, came over to me, and she said, I didn't want to eavesdrop either, but I was in the seat directly behind you, and I was so disengaged I just took early retirement from my company. And we both got a laugh. Turns out she lived a block away from me. And I thought, what if I got on the loudspeaker right on the plane and said, how many of you want to come over to my seat and have a conversation? Can you imagine what would have happened on that plane? So for me, it's a microcosm of what's happening in society.
It really is. I mean, three people on one flight, chances are, I mean, I don't even know how you would multiply that out, but I would have to say an awful lot of them were in exactly the same position.
It was just, it's one of my favorite stories because it really illustrates what's going on out there.
It really does, and I think people don't really understand how disengaged or how kind of miserable they are until sometimes they start hearing other stories and talking with other people, and they're going, oh, me too. Yeah, do you find that that's the way it happens? I mean, they're just kind of quietly slogging along thinking it'll get better, and then all of a sudden something happens and says, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, that, you know, as I said, there's those moments, right, those paper cuts. But here's the other thing. A lot of people don't really understand the feelings. I'll tell you a quick story. I was speaking at a conference of very high-level people women lawyers and their clients in major companies. So high-powered women. It was a room full of about 100 people. And there were a number of us that were speaking that day, and I was on a panel, and we're talking about leadership. And there was a woman who had gotten up a couple hours earlier when another speaker had asked people to tell their story. And she started talking about how after 17 years, she made the decision to quit her job, sell most of her things, really change her life, a really powerful, powerful story. So a couple hours later, I'm on this panel, and something came up where I answered a question by telling the story about how I diagnosed my own disengagement and kind of what that was. And all of a sudden, this woman, all 6'2" of her, very statuesque woman, jumps up from her table and shouts out in the middle of the room, "Oh, my God, I'm not crazy. I'm just disengaged." And the entire room kind of went crazy, no pun intended, and said,
You guys
need to go talk to each other. So we ended up speaking later, and she's become a dear friend. But we had these conversations where she really thought she was going crazy. And that wasn't the issue at all.
Why is that? I mean, what are some of the warning signs of disengagement? Look, last year I went through, you know, in my virtual assistant's practice and my web development company, I'm successful. I do very, very well at what I do. And I love what I do. But last year I was miserable. I'll tell you, I was flat out miserable. And I had to have some serious talks with myself. I finally got past it, but you know what I did? Started going in another direction, reengaging my passion.
That's that tweaking. That's that job sculpting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where we
but I didn't
all
know
do
to call
this.
It that. I just knew I had to do something.
And that's why I love getting out and being able to talk to people about this, because, frankly, it's not rocket science. So I'd love to share with you just some warning signs that you can think about. And actually, in my book, which is called Coming Alive, The Journey to Reengage Your Life and Career, I actually have a 20-question questionnaire. So simple. And you can answer that and actually score yourself if you ever wanted to do a self-assessment. But think about these. You know, we all have cars that have these warning systems right on the dashboard where the light flashes. And I don't know about you, but when I see a light flash, I panic, right? I pull over to the side of the road. I try and figure it out. I even take out the paper manual and try and match the picture to what's going on. And if we really think about it, we have our own dashboard that can light up. And one of those is you develop kind of this I don't care attitude, where you just have this feeling of it doesn't really matter. And then you start to come in later, leave earlier, take longer lunches. You spend less time physically in the workplace. Productivity starts to go down. You have more mood swings, and they're quicker to come on. And also you isolate yourself from others, be that maybe sitting in the back of the room at a meeting with your arms folded and not speaking up, or not engaging in hallway conversations, or not going out. You know, many of us who work at home, we could spend days or weeks without even going out of our home, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't connect up with other people.
Right.
We're no longer innovative or creative. And the final one is we're lethargic. Our energy level really goes down. Those are the kinds of things that flash on your dashboard to warn you that you might be slipping into disengagement.
So what do you do at that point? And look, I've seen this in the workplace when I did make the mistake of working in other people's offices. I am a run with scissors kind of gal. I don't play well with others. It's not a good environment for me. But I notice that in other people. Me, you know, when I'm going to do a job, I do it well, and then I go home. But I would see exactly what you're talking about, people avoiding having conversations in the break room, not speaking to one another. The arms over the chest is a big one for me. I mean, if I see that in anybody, no matter what it is, whether it's personal or business, I know there's something going on. But to me, it's astonishing that other people don't pay attention to that sign. That's a biggie for me. When I see that, I'm like, whoops. I mean, that's a big old stop sign in your face.
I think the most important thing, in an age of technology and tools, and we already know I'm old school because I took out the paper and pen, right? But the most important tool one can have cost me $3.99. It's a hand mirror, and I bring it everywhere I speak. And I hold that up, and I say to people, the most important thing you can do is reflect and recalculate. It's look in that mirror, but really, really be willing to accept what you're seeing. How many days? Because my disengagement didn't just come on in a day. Looking back, I can tell you that I was probably feeling that way for a good 2 years. But for whatever reason, that day, I actually decided to be open to what I was seeing in the mirror. And so I want people to look in that mirror and figure out where you are. It's never too late to course correct, and it's never too early. I speak a lot to college age kids or people that are 2-3 years out, and I completely remember when I spoke here in San Francisco to a group of current students and young alumni of my alma mater, Syracuse University. And when I started talking, it was in a room where there was a bar and it was noisy, and all of a sudden I start telling my story and you could hear a pin drop. And I finished talking and I thought, well, I'm just going to go home now because, you know, they're all going to do their thing. And I went to get my stuff and I turned around and there was this long line waiting for me. And I heard student after student say to me, I'm taking this major because my parents or my guidance counselor told me this is what I should be doing. I'm not passionate about it. I need to course correct before it's too late. I've had people like me 25, 30 years into careers who are saying I need to course correct. So for all of us out there, it's never too late to look in that mirror and be open to what you're going to see. Then you can come up with a plan. But first you have to accept what you see.
Do people find that difficult? I did. I found it a bit difficult because, you know, here's the thing, and I know you know what I'm talking about. You look at your bank account. You look at the successes that you've piled up. You're on a trajectory that people would, in my industry, virtual assistants, I would kill to get the retainer fee she's getting. I was wretched. I really was. And there were a variety of reasons. It wasn't exciting to me anymore because there comes a point when you're very good at what you do, there's just no challenge anymore. And I had reached that point. There was nothing truly that was challenging me, and I was bored. And you know, and there were a lot of different things that were going on. But, you know, then, you know, the whole reality would say, okay, look at your successes. Look at the bank account. Look at your client list. Look. And I think, oh, I can't make any changes. And I did kind of the same thing one day. I mean, I just blew up in my own face and said, I'm not doing this anymore. Yes, it's working. Yes, as a business model, it's great. I hate it. I'm not doing it anymore. And, I mean, I had to do some big course correcting. But once I made that decision, that year of apathy and irritation and mood swings just disappeared. I felt like me again.
Yeah, you feel like you wake up. That's why I refer to it as coming alive. And here's one of the most important things for your listeners to understand, that when you allow yourself to continue to wallow in this and just kind of accept it as the norm, and you become sort of in this mode of working just to survive, not working to thrive, it feels like you're sinking in a pit of quicksand. You know, with quicksand, the sands are just always shifting. You can never feel like you're on solid footing. And what happens is you tend to sink lower and lower until that sand is sort of choking you. That's what it feels like to many people when they're disengaged. And when you do that, you almost feel like your voice can't be heard, right? You're calling out for a lifeline. But what's happening is you're losing your connection to your loved ones, your friends and your colleagues and people around you, because you've now isolated yourself, and life is really going to pass you by when you're selfishly in that pit of quicksand.
Well, you know what I found, Ruth? I was working harder than I ever had before, and part of it was just because I felt like I had to power through it. You know, that mindset,
I
can do this, I can power through it.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing now that's what it was, but even though I was working harder and I was actually working smarter and my systems were working, it seemed like I just got further and further behind. I mean, I was exhausted, truly exhausted.
I think what happens is, you know, we've been conditioned by society to chase after that ever-elusive brass ring, right, where I got to get more, I've got to do this, I've got to reach this, then if I do this, then I can travel, then I can do this, and we're constantly always chasing after that. And I mentioned when we first started this conversation that life is about a journey, not a destination. And what happens on that journey is it takes twists and turns, and sometimes you're going to come up with roadblocks, both big and small, that detour you. And something happened to me 14 months ago that was the biggest detour in my life. You know, I had been chasing after that brass ring. I had been doing all of that stuff. And when I made the decision to walk away, my beloved husband was right by my side cheering me on. He was my biggest supporter there for all of this. And 14 months ago, when I was away on a business trip, my beloved husband passed away suddenly at the age of 57. And I tell this story because I want people to understand, as I reflect back on that, that if he had passed away before I made the decision to accept my disengagement and change my life, when I was so selfish and not connected to him, right, because I had brought that misery home with me, I would have been even more devastated than I am. I don't even know how I would have gotten through it all. Because of that enormous feeling of guilt and not being there and not being connected and being so selfish. But because I had made those changes in my life, the last 4 years, we were so fantastic together. Because we were no longer chasing the brass ring, but we were really just fully engaged in our relationship and our life. And I'm so grateful to have had that time, because you never know when that detour in the road is going to happen.
No, you don't. We did talk about this in an earlier call, and I'm very glad that you shared that with me. I can't imagine what it would have been like you said, if things hadn't been so very good with you those last few years, because there is a thing called survivor guilt, and it's hard to survive. It really is.
It very much is. But again, I don't tell it to be a downer, but I think it's important for people. And here's an impact it had on someone that I'd love to share with your listeners, to tell you the power sometimes of stories. I was speaking at a women's empowerment conference, and when I told the story, a woman came up to me afterwards, gave me a big hug, and said, thank you for sharing that story, and I'm going to go home tonight and call my husband and tell him I love him. And I sort of looked at her like, well, that's great. And she's like, no, I need to explain to you what's going on. My husband is an addict, and because of that, we have a daughter. I had to put my daughter first and knew I needed to separate and get a divorce because it wasn't healthy for my family. She said, but I want to go home and call him and tell them that I love him and that he'll always be in my life. He'll always be my daughter's father. I don't want to waste time and not have that moment. I don't want to be stuck in that quicksand. And sure enough, she came back for the second day of the conference, told me what a phenomenal conversation the two of them had the night before. And so if one person can look at life a little bit differently and say sometimes there's more important things in life and we have to put ourselves first so that we can put our loved ones first, that's the reason I tell the story.
You know, I'm almost speechless, and that rarely occurs, so thank you for sharing that. Now, I have to ask you, Ruth, when you and your husband, and I'm sure that this was kind of a mutual thing, when you and your husband decided that you would walk away from your corporate life, that you would branch out, and, you know, you had already done your course correcting in your head, how did that translate at home? Because, as we said, you can't really compartmentalize. So I'm guessing, just from the conversations that you and I have had, that he was fully on board.
100%. My husband was my best friend. He was my biggest cheerleader. And as he thought, he looked back on my career, 30 years, I had done quite well. And he sort of looked at me and said, what do you have left to prove? Because I could have very easily just said, oh, okay, it's just this particular job. I could go get another HR job, or I could do this. But he knew that I had a calling inside of me. And he knew how powerful that could be for me and was there every step of the way. He read every single thing I wrote. He was by my side. And, you know, when I contrast that to a year before when I'd be bullied, let's say, at work, and I'd come home and he'd say, oh, honey, don't cook tonight. Let's just, you know, let's go have a romantic dinner. And I'd say, can you just order Thai food? Because I'm just going to go in the bedroom and lie down, maybe watch some TV. So I wouldn't even have dinner with him. What a waste, right? So, you know, just such differences when we're being our true, authentic self and living in the moment and doing what we love, it just makes for a happier life with everyone, your friends, your family, your children. It's so important.
It really is. And to me, it doesn't matter if you're married or if you're single. You have to engage. Listen, I'm, you know, as I've often described myself, I'm a high-functioning introvert. You know, the day Amazon delivers 30 pounds of fresh crawfish and lettuce to my door, I'm selling my car. I'm done. I'm serious. I'm not kidding. I mean, I'll hire a taxi to take my dog and myself to our various groomers. I mean, which is, I'll sell the car.
Uber, but best invention ever, yeah.
That's what I keep hearing. But, you know, the thing is, I am alone. I'm a loner by choice. I'm a loner by nature. But I found out the hard way that even as much introspective time that I need, and I need a lot of quiet time, I still do need to interact with other people. And it took me the longest kind of time to figure that out. I don't know why. It just did. So that was one of the things that I did when I started course correcting when I first started my business, because I started my business when I got my computer science degree in 2000, and trust me, the internet was not what it is. I mean, we could build websites, but they were basically black or white or blue and white. I mean, we didn't have, you know, GUI, which is graphical user interface. Social media didn't exist. In just a decade and a half, things have changed enormously. What I did not have access to was anybody who understood my vision. Nobody. Trust me, nobody. And the virtual assistants industry, I still don't even try to explain that to my family and friends. I just say, I'm a web developer. They get that. Oh, okay. But, you know, it's just once things became available to me, like online coaches or online mentors, you know, YouTube, where I could go watch people like you tell your stories, like, oh, it was a whole different world for me. And it pulled me out of my, I wouldn't call it a tailspin, but it pulled me out of my complete isolation.
Well, what it did was it re-engaged you. And
absolutely.
Here's the great thing. You know, you talk about being an introvert, and in many ways, even though I've done human resources for a career, don't ask me to go to a cocktail party and make small chit-chat, right? It's
not
a comfort zone for me. But by doing your radio show, think how many people you touch virtually, right? And share your message. So it's so fascinating and exciting. Oh, and I touch people through my writing. You know, if I write an article and it goes out in that great big wide web, right, or it goes viral, how exciting that is that people reach out. I've heard from people in Japan and India and Australia and across the country, and you're like, wow. So there are so many ways to reengage without having to take us completely out of our comfort zone.
Can you give us some tips for that? I mean, reaching out through a podcast is one way. And on the other side of that description you just gave, I get to meet, I have the honor of meeting the greatest people. Look, I live in what could easily pass as a village in southwest Louisiana. I mean, it's fairly rural. I'm surrounded by sugarcane fields that sadly are disappearing as more houses go up, but it's a quiet little place, and I love it. And as a crow flies, we're probably 10 or 15 miles from the Gulf. It suits me, but the thing is, I get to meet people like you. You're in San Francisco. I get to meet people like Larry Wingate and Bob Berg, and I mean, and I have formed lasting relationships with so many of the people that I'm honored to interview. It's a great thing. But I'll tell you, if I didn't have this podcast, I would be even more isolated than I am. And not by choice. I don't wouldn't want to have that happen to me. I love my podcast. I'm on here every Friday going, woohoo, I get to talk with really great people. So there is that.
You know, it's about taking and putting yourself first on the journey. You know, taking personal accountability what's happening for you. I like to say that every one of us really needs to be a CEO. And I don't mean chief executive officer, because I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want that stress. But really, it's about being a chief engagement officer and owning our own engagement. We're dealt a hand. Let's do it. And here are some things. Just, you know, there are many in the business workplace, but just personally, let's just share some things about how you can be happy again in what you do. And the first is to understand that it's always your choice. You're the only person that can make the choice for you to be happy at work, right? You own it. Take charge of your own development, whether you're an entrepreneur or you work for a corporation, right? No one cares more about your development than you. You made the decision to go back to school, right, to get that computer science degree. Take a class. Do something. Don't be shy and ask for feedback. You know, talk to people. Focus on the positive. And really do things like go out and exercise. Take a long walk. Do things like that. Volunteer. Give back. One of the best ways I know of to really getting that spark back and reengaging is to give back. Turn inward to spirituality may help some people. Really reconnect with your family and friends. Take up a hobby. Travel. Take a class. You know, go take a cooking class or a pottery class. It may have nothing to do with the fact that, you know, you run a virtual assistant business. I speak and write about employee engagement. But I love to cook. Go take a class. Because
me too.
The minute you start doing things, right, that make you happy, that's the greatest thing. You know, my guinea pig used to test all my recipes is now gone, but my friends have reaped the benefit of my cooking. So it's about doing stuff like that.
This is a true story. Yesterday I had to meet up with a friend of mine. She lives in the next town over, and she's as busy as I am. She also has a home office. And I had made a vat of gumbo. I have never learned. I come from a large family, and I have never learned to cook for one or two people. So when you say your friends share, I was meeting her in a Walmart parking lot handing off 2 gallon bags of gumbo. Here you go. Have a good day. I'm going back home now. So.
I bet it was absolutely delicious.
It is. I mean, gumbo, you can't go wrong with a good gumbo. But yeah, you have to do these things. So when somebody comes to you, and I think you do a lot of coaching and you know, working with people who are going through this, what are some of the most common stories that you're hearing right now?
Well, I actually don't really do coaching anymore. It's interesting. So here's a great thing about following your passion and being an entrepreneur is you can say no to things you don't want to do anymore. And so I made the decision to say no to things that I was tired of doing. I would much rather stand up in front of a room of people, be it 20 people or 2,000 people, and talk about this issue. And really what happens for me is I get a lot of, oh, my God, you were telling my story. It was like looking in my own mirror. But one of the things I love hearing most is from managers. When I work with people in companies that manage other people, a dead battery cannot charge another is one of the truest statements I will ever make. Because if you are a manager and are going through disengagement yourself, you are not capable of engaging a team full of people. And so what I love is when I have people come up to me and say, wow, I need to go look in my own mirror or take your self-assessment quiz or do any of this because I need to make sure that my gas tank is not on empty before I can go out and try and help my team. Thank you for kind of shining the light on that. It's a really big aha moment for people when they realize this. If they manage others, it isn't just about themselves, but it's about everyone else that they have to impact. So that's a really wonderful moment for me that I hear all the time.
Now, I wanted to go back to something that you said at the very top of the show, which is bully bosses.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all had those. How do you cope? I mean, if you're in an environment where you're saying, okay, I'm going to leave, but I've got this plan in place, let's go with your 10 months. How do you deal with that bully boss in that 10 months? Can you smile at them because you know you're about to leave them? Or do you have any stories to share?
I've got some great tips on this. And as I said, I won the lottery when it came to bully bosses. And the biggest mind shift that one has to make, and this was so critical for me, is I had to stop feeling like I was a victim and recognizing that I was a target of a bully. And that is a huge mind shift and different, right? Because you want to feel, oh, poor me, I'm a victim, right? And so some of the tips that I share, I've written quite a bit about this subject. I had a recent article that people can find in the Huffington Post called The Dirty Little Secret Corporate America Doesn't Want to Get Out. And some of my tips on that are to display self-esteem and show a positive attitude and don't let the bully be given the satisfaction of seeing how that's affected you. Don't let yourself become isolated from the workplace, right? We had talked before about sort of people with disengagement isolating themselves. Every day, find someone new that you haven't recently talked to, make a connection, because one of the things bullies love to do is to alienate their targets among their coworkers. Another thing is to remain calm and quiet, which can really throw a bully off their game. They want you to yell back at them. Sometimes in the heat of the moment, if you're in a meeting with them, excuse yourself to go to the restroom, take some deep breaths, come back to things, just get out of the heat of the moment. And really, frankly, create a get-out strategy, because usually bullies won't stop their behavior. And going back to this ownership issue, it's really better for you to take control of your life and own it than rely on others to change. It's very rare that you're going to change a bully.
You know, I have never understood how they thrive in the workplace. How in the heck does that happen? How are they not called out and put somewhere else?
If I had the answer to that question, I'd be the richest person in the world. I've tried to figure that out for years. You know, it's the old adage, oh, they must have pictures on someone or know something or know someone, right?
Right.
That's usually what we hear. The reality of it is it's really this simple. The people that they report to and work around have no clue how to manage them. And so it's easier to just turn a blind eye to it than try and deal with it. And
how is that easier? I mean, you have a traumatized workforce. You've got people who will never – I don't understand that. I don't see how that's easier.
They shut their eyes to it. It's amazing how that happens. I've seen it so many times. And it's really quite sad. And here's another fact is that, you know, people think those that really bully, especially, and there's many types of bullies, but I'm talking now more about sort of the yeller, screamer. I like to think of bullies as big, ugly, lonely losers yelling loudly.
With pimples.
Or yearning for attention, right?
They have bad acne.
Yeah, exactly. But they're not confident. Actually, it's quite the opposite. Most bullies have really low self-confidence. And that's how they manifest it, and they act out.
You know, I actually noticed that when I was in grade school, there was this one kid, and that's why I made the comment about pimples. He was a very heavy boy, which, you know, when I was in school, that wasn't the norm. So, you know, he probably got picked on that for that. But he was an animal. He really was. This is the nastiest kid. It wouldn't surprise me to find out that he's in jail somewhere or dead. But he made the mistake not of picking on me, because I always just looked at him like he was a turd, but he made the mistake of really bullying one of my brothers and sisters, and I didn't say a word for him. I just took off and headbutted him, knocked him down. Do you know he left us alone? I never said a word. You know, I just calmly knocked him on his butt and walked off and embarrassed the bejeebers out of him. But it was a real lesson for me as a child that you don't engage with them. You just knock them down and walk off.
One of
At
the
least
worst
that's how I cope with them. I'm
one
not
of
saying
the worst,
this is advice, everybody.
One of the worst kind of bullies is what I call a scab picker. And think about your big brother or big sister, right? They'll continue to tease you about something when they see there's a reaction. And that's what happens a lot with a bully. And so that's why you don't want to let them see you sweat. And you don't want to be in a position of being that woe is me victim, because then they're going to continue to come back and pick at that scab.
Well, of course they are. I mean, once they see that you've got a soft underbelly, you're it. I mean, you're the target.
Yep.
Wow. Well, is there anything else that we didn't cover? I mean, this has been a fascinating conversation. We're just about to the end of the program.
No,
was there
I think
anything else you'd like to share?
I think what's really important for people, again, I encourage all of you to, after this call or sometime today, go and look in the mirror and assess where you are. Are you happy with what you're doing? Are there things that you want to do and want to tweak? And as I said before, it's not going to happen overnight. So the other thing you have to have on this journey, besides a really strong mirror, is you really need to have patience, because changing your life won't happen in a moment. So as final thoughts, remember, people, just walk towards something better. Don't run away from what's not working. So thank you so much for the time today.
Oh, it has been amazing having you here. Listen, before we end the podcast, where can people find you?
Oh, the best way to find me, thank you for asking. The best way to find me is through my website, which is www.ruthkross, that's R-U-T-H-K-Ross, R-O-S-S, like in snow, .com. And on there you will find links to some of my material, my blogs, my book. You can connect with me and sign up for a newsletter, and you can connect with me on Twitter, Facebook, etc. And feel free, my email address also is ruth@r-squared-resources, r-s-q-u-a-r-e-d-r-e-s-o-u-r-c-e-s.com. And I'd love to hear from you. If you have a story you want to share, if you have a question, just want to chat, please do reach out. I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, great. Listen, I just looked on your Facebook business page, too, and your Huffington Post article is on there. It's, you know, right up top and center.
Great.
So everybody connect with Ruth on Facebook, LinkedIn, all of those others. But be sure to check in with her, because she's got a lot of great information. Ruth, thank you so much for being with me here today. It has been wonderful chatting with you. And I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways and the tips and advice as much as I did. So everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Ruth Ross, or Ruth K. Ross. And I will see you next week. Ruth, thank you, and have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.